Welcome to the New Mexico's Financial Institutions Division broadcast on financial education topics with leaders, advocates, and practitioners in our beautiful state of New Mexico. Our focus is on financial capability strategies at the state, tribal, community, and programmatic levels. This is your host, Vicki Oldman. I would like to introduce to you our guest today, our very own New Mexico Cabinet Secretary of Indian Affairs, Lynn Trujillo. Lynn is a member of Sandia Pueblo, as well as Acoma and Taos Pueblos. She is a long-time advocate, 2 decades of doing this work in Native communities, and has held actually several leadership positions in her own community and, of course, here in the state. She really understands and gets what it's like to work on the ground in our communities, in our Native communities specifically, as well as navigating in the state and also federal level. And doing that work, Lynn recognizes the importance of relationship building, time, and what that all means to our Native communities, and really is a strong advocate as well for preserving Native culture and languages. So I'd love to introduce again our Cabinet Secretary of Indian Affairs, Lynn Trujillo. Ahiaha. Thank you for taking time to connect and willing to do this interview. Welcome.
I really appreciate the opportunity to join you today.
Yes. Is there anything else you want to share about yourself? I know I kind of did the high level, but anything that you would like others to know about you?
That I have a wonderful, awesome family back home at Sandia Pueblo that I miss very much. That I look forward to one day being able to start my second career as an artist here shortly.
Shout out to the family out there. And so How exciting. Second career of an artist. What sort of art? I'm curious.
I do primarily painting. Before, when I was an undergraduate, I studied both religion and fine arts, and then went to law school. But really, my heart is in art, and look forward to a time when I can be able to commit myself to that full time.
And that is so much of our culture in various mm-hmm. Native communities is the art. It really sort mm-hmm. of grounds us. And so I actually would like to start our discussion a little differently and to just sort of ground us, because we both come from Native communities and we know the importance of story, you know, hearing our relatives talk about story, even at dinner time or just when we come for gatherings, there's always story that sort of grounds and we hear lessons. And sometimes it's interesting, we don't really get the learning right away until we're in that particular sort of experience, or when we get older and we realize, oh, that's what that story is about. And so I'm curious, based on how you grew up with family and what you experienced with family, do you remember sort of like your first memory of money, or maybe how money was talked about in your community?
Yeah, so I think my first memory has to do with a job and working in the summertime, being excited about being able to earn some of my own money. My family, you know, didn't have a lot of access to capital, but I clearly remember the importance of getting a summer job, and it was usually sponsored through a federal program or through the tribe somehow. And I started working when I was 14. And I think that part of it was related to having a little bit of cash in my pocket. But I also think it was just that importance that my family instilled in me in terms of just a good work ethic and being productive. And so that kind of is my earliest memory in relation to finances. I do have another funny story kind of related to finances and access to credit. My father, we were talking about earlier about me wanting to start my second career as an artist, and my father was an artist. And I remember, he primarily utilized cash. And I remember him talking to me when I was a teenager about being careful about credit cards, and that if you didn't have enough money, if you didn't have enough cash to be able to pay for something, then you shouldn't go out and buy it, which was good in a sense because it kept me out of getting into debt. But then also I didn't realize the importance of building credit so that you can have access to it later on. And I just really remember my father talking to me about that, and really not having a credit card and relying primarily on cash in order to meet the needs of our family.
Makes a lot of sense. 14 years old, you were working and making the moolah. A young age. And when you were working, how old were you when you first opened your first bank account?
I don't even know if I can't even remember that. I don't know if it was a matter of signing my check over to my father to deposit. But I, don't have any real early memories of that. I mean, I think it wasn't until I was well into high school and then thinking about college and then thinking about how am I going to pay for this and applying for loans that I really started to try to learn more about, financial literacy. I think at the time there really wasn't much in terms of financial literacy and education in the community. It came from maybe what I observed from my own family members and how they treated their finances.
Well, it sounds like you had a really good role model in terms of your parents and your dad. As you were sharing a little bit about your story, I mean, clearly there were some values that I heard in terms of, working and contributing and having good work ethics and being productive on your job site. And then also sort of, not, as you're saying, there wasn't much financial education classes back then. Mm-hmm. However, he understood sort of managing resources. Like, I would wonder how he learned that in terms of the credit. If you don't have enough resources to get it, then don't get it now. Mm-hmm. Which also I think emphasizes this whole instant gratification, which I feel like the media bombards our consumers with, and him kind of underlying and scoring like you can wait to get that, and then the other thing I think I'm hearing you say is you are talking about your story about finances is the importance of building credit and what does that do and how does that help with access to credit, particularly when we have a lot of our Native people who are artists and a lot of our community people who want to build their own home, or start their own company. You need to build credit, you need to manage debt and, have some sort of income coming in to build those sort of assets. So clearly you've gotten some really good lessons from your dad.
Yeah. And I also saw some of the challenges that he encountered too, right? I mean, as you were saying, he's an artist and so when money came in, it was good. And it taught us how to save. Maybe it wasn't this traditional or this like a banking institution savings kind of concept. But I think it was really important in terms of if you have a certain amount of resources, how are you going to care for those resources that you have? What are you going to and maybe we didn't talk about budget per se, but I think that that happened where my father would pay the bills and pay for food. And, that was a kind of modeling that took place in terms of the responsibility that you were referring to earlier. And it's striking to me in this conversation to think like, you know, how I started the podcast earlier saying that I didn't have any real financial education per se, but I guess that the, you know, many of us do have that type of financial education, and it may not be in a curriculum or a pamphlet or book, but that we do have a lot of those learned lessons from our own family members when we see that in terms of how they live their life and the allocation of resources, whether it's money or even for Pueblo people in our traditional ways of life, right? You know, farming, my father probably learned those lessons from his mother and father because they were farmers. And so that type of resource allocation, I think, was important to that type of financial education.
Absolutely. That's a beautiful transition to sort of the next question that I wanted to ask, in that how much do you feel like our traditional way of living mirrors this concept of financial capability?
I mean, I think it's very rooted in our traditional cultures. I mean, as I, you know, sharing with you earlier, I mean, the resource allocation and what do we do with the resources, whether it's a dollar, whether it's livestock or produce, right? Those are still resources that have some value, a value that we equate with it. And I think that, you know, that very much mirrors our traditional culture and who we are. And I also think that one of the things that actually today's society could benefit from is just the concept that we have as traditional, as Native people, is the sharing of these resources, right? So everyone benefits. I think that when you think about a good harvest, you know, everybody would benefit. And we see that, to me, that's a way of asset building, right? That's share, building your assets, not just for your own individual growth and family, which, you know, that's a primary purpose, but there's also these secondary purposes, which are very reflective in our communities. And I think it's really important when we look to expanding that type of asset building and access to those type of resources in our tribal communities.
So beautiful. Thank you so much for sharing and emphasizing and putting light on sort of this value of sharing and how that really reflects in our communities, and that it wasn't all about like money. You know, for a long time, it has never really been focused on that. It was about community, and it was about family, and it's about coming together, and it's about sharing, and it's about sharing those sort of resources to help each other. And like, I know, you know, one of the Pueblos, you know, the Zuni, for example, like they all come together to help build homes, right? Even like, mm-hmm. I'm from Diné, like, you know, everybody comes together to help build the Hoans, you know, the Hogans. So it was, everybody came in to pitch in, so it didn't feel like a burden on one person or one family. And mm-hmm. managing resources now like that, you know, we could really learn to kind of go back and see how we were managing resources back then. And I think we also kind of made me think about your dad when you were saying about the, you know, don't get resources ahead of yourself if you don't have the resources now. And you think about that with natural resources or even hunting, that you don't get those resources, you don't use those resources until they're ready, you know, to take, you know, you just don't take because you want to accumulate, you take for what you need. Right. So mm-hmm. I just mm-hmm. think that's just beautiful.
And I think, Vicki, that goes back to like that responsibility, right? Which is very much a part of, I feel like, financial capability and capacity, right? There's a responsibility with that. So in not only the assets that I'm building, but if I'm going to go and apply for credit because I want to get a home loan, I mean, there is a responsibility with that, you know, that comes along with all of that, which I think is really important and critical.
Yes. So you had shared, I love what you had said about the responsibility piece in terms of financial capability. Let's define that a little bit. Let's break that down. How would we describe what that means so listeners know what that language means? Because I feel like it's a sort of jargon, right? It's like, yeah.
I think, you know, and it's not just on the onus of the person either. I think that's the other thing where, you know, we can improve upon when we talk about, you know, we talk about financial literacy, right? What does that mean? And I think, and then responsibility. I mean, there's the individual yourself, like, you know, what can I do to educate myself about my finances? Where do I see myself? Do I envision myself in a home? What is that going to take to get there? But I also think there's responsibility in terms of our, you know, community that we reside in. Also responsibility in terms of the banking industry and also our government, right? I mean, there's some of that. I mean, because there's, you know, folks who make decisions related to policy, and we want policies that encourage access to financial resources and don't constrain those resources. I mean, I think when I think about responsibility, it's across the board. But as an individual, maybe starting to think through what is it that you might envision for yourself one day, or how is it that you might, what is it that you envision for yourself, and what might it take to get there? And who can you learn from? How can they help you? You know, I didn't grow up with a lot of that. And I also think that, you know, there's a responsibility maybe as a shared collective, and it would be interesting to hear if on your podcast you talk to anybody about this, where, you know, sometimes the lessons that you learn can also be the not so great decisions that you make along the way. So, I had a good teacher, my father, but I also wasn't, I remember buying my first vehicle, and I didn't have the education that I should have had walking in to purchase my first vehicle, and just the hard lessons, financial burden that I learned from that. But I think that could be an incredible resource in terms of sharing those lessons with other people as they're moving through the process.
Absolutely. There are a couple of things I wanted to emphasize that you said, I think make a lot of sense for us to all know and take ownership and responsibility is, besides the support, is what I heard you say, sort of this give and get relationship, you know, as individuals within our communities, within, you know, different government entities, financial institutions. And, you know, so it comes out and it also goes back. And so how are we listening to each other in terms of what is needed and what needs to change, you know, for more financial education, you know, knowledge about finances, skills about finances, as well as services, you know, related to finances. And what does that look like now? What could it look like later? And really kind of honing that back to the individual about what is it that they want, you know, what's sort of, what's their vision, and what does that look like for our families? I love that focus, that it's not just the individual, it's bigger than that in terms of responsibility and making changes for strengthening and improving how we do financial capability services, you know, and what does that look like? So go ahead.
Sorry, Vicki. I also think part of it is just like having access to materials that are accessible by different people. And then I just also think, you know, I think part of it is like not having people being embarrassed, right? That you don't know. And I just think about a conversation that I had really recently with a family member who, you know, has quite a bit of formal education. But she and I were talking about a 401k and investments and stuff. And she, you know, it took her a while to, you know, she's like, I didn't know about that. And it was interesting for me to have that experience of sharing that with her, because I think, you know, sometimes there's like stigma or negativity when we're, and I think it's different when it comes to like money and how, you know, that, and I don't know how to talk about it, but I don't know if you know what I mean, Vicky, mm-hmm. but I think that's kind of like in being embarrassed, right? Mm-hmm. And I don't think that we should be embarrassed about not knowing, but I've had conversations with people where, and I've been embarrassed for not knowing either, right? Not knowing better, but, you know, how do we get over that too, in terms of not having it be one more impediment to people having financial security?
That is so important. It really is, because if we have individuals and families feeling vulnerable and embarrassed about not knowing, you know, things that they feel that they should know at the time, how do we make that sort of conversation safe, right? Is it what I'm hearing as well. And so, mm-hmm. so people can get over that fear and ask those questions and decide how they want to move forward. And then the other thing I also heard you say about even this viewpoint of the word money, like there's mm-hmm. stereotypes on that. And so a lot of times when I talk to community or individuals, when we talk about money, I always like to use it in a frame of, it's a tool. That's all it is. It's a tool. And it's, you know, it's a way to kind of get to what you really want to get to, you know? So if you want to start a business, this is a tool to get you there. And it's just a matter of managing it. And sometimes in traditional sense, I'll say, you know, it's like an herb, right? It's an herb and it has different uses and how it depends on how you use that modality. And so that's how we see it. It's not the be all, but it's a way to help you get to the next place. So I think changing how we use those terms is what I'm hearing you say. And you know, the big thing that I'm hearing a lot is, you know, decolonization of language and away. And I think this is one area that needs that sort of amplified and, you know, spotlight and having more conversation on that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, I think that's one way in which we can start to change some things in terms of, like, you know, financial literacy, whatever that means, right? I think it should mirror a community and the values of that community. I mean, that's why, you know, I think that, like, Native CDFIs are so impactful mm-hmm. for our communities, right? They're people oftentimes from those communities working with people from their own community. I mean, have a shared value system, language. It's less, I think, intimidating. I mean, I just, you know, this conversation has me reflecting back on a number of instances where I'm filling out paperwork and I need the access to the capital, right, to the resource, but I'm at a disadvantage because I can understand some of it, I don't fully understand the implications of maybe at that time what I was getting into and what does that mean for me, and really that disadvantage, right? Because actually, what we're talking about is a way to empower. It's a tool to empower ourselves, our families, our community, for whatever that means. And it's like that, like you said, it's a means to something else. I think about it the same way in terms of education. Education is powerful, and people can be educated in a variety of ways. Right? You don't have to necessarily go to a four-year university, but education is a powerful tool because it provides you with options. And I think that's one thing that, to me, you know, financial security and capability, it provides you and your family and your community with that ability to have different options. And you're maybe in the snapshot could be the option to have a vehicle to get you to your job, but it also could be education. It could also be retirement. It could be all these different things. It could be a home for yourself and your family. So I think it's really empowering.
Absolutely. And thank you so much for bringing up CDFIs, Native Community Development Finance Institutions. And the next interview, we're going to be interviewing one, actually. So folks will get to hear a little bit more about their services, what their role is, and also know where they're located here in New Mexico, so you can have access to that particular institution. Which makes me think about the next thing, you know, in terms of our Native communities. Because I know when I ran into you last year, I remember you telling me, like, this particular topic is near and dear to your heart. And so given where you're at now and the work that your office is doing, what do you feel is still needed and needs to happen in our Native communities in terms of this topic?
So I think we definitely need more conversations. I think we definitely, one of the things that we're working towards and is supporting entrepreneurs. I think that, you know, we have so many entrepreneurs within our tribal communities, and it is a struggle for them to get seed money oftentimes. And I think there's a lot of really impactful work that is happening, but more could be done. And you know, it doesn't have to be $1 million grant or seed money that you're providing to an entrepreneur. I mean, I've seen, like, it could be really impactful that you're able to provide somebody with $5,000-$10,000. And I think, you know, this past year when we were looking at our budget and putting a proposal together for the legislative session this past fiscal year, one of the things that we put forward in our budget, which unfortunately didn't get funded, was actually to do more of this micro lending, micro grants to entrepreneurs. And, you know, we were able to support Native Women Lead, who are Native entrepreneurs, to provide some seed money, you know, and they're doing incredible work. They're using a fund to lend capital to Native women throughout the state. I really strongly believe that we need to do more of that. Those micro grant investments are really critical. I think oftentimes help people get off the ground. They're able to not only expand their business, but also able to hire people, maybe even people within their own communities to provide jobs. So, I mean, that's one of the areas that I'm really excited about, that I would like us to do more work on. And I actually think there's more opportunity for other investors, for people to do more of that work. The other area that we had, as a department, had talked about and had, you know, bounced around whether or not it would be feasible in the session, to look at something like the individual development accounts, right? And how to have, like, a match savers program by using state or federal funds. But I think that, you know, that's an idea to get people to start saving, because not just in tribal communities, but I think across the nation, we're seeing that many people don't have savings, or they have very little of that. And, you know, trying to start that. And, you know, maybe your $25 that you got for your birthday instead of the immediacy of buying something, you can start to maybe not put the whole thing away, but you can put $15 away and spend the $10 on something else. But I think those are really important too.
Wonderful. So what I'm hearing you say, particularly what you all have been thinking about and doing, is looking for additional resources to help entrepreneurs in our Native communities, because I agree. I feel like there has been this surge, more so. I feel like we've always been doing our own sort of businesses in-house, you know, within our smaller communities. And I have seen it. And the trajectory of this past, you know, if I was like 10, 15 years back to now, and even more so going out, I see the increase of Native business owners, which I think is beautiful, amazing, and powerful. So hearing some seed money, especially for folks that are really starting to incubate and wanting to grow and also provide jobs. And I love the idea of the individual development account IDA programs as a match savings program, and to consider that. I know that that had been successful many years ago. And I know one of the challenges, again, is having funding, right? And then that also requires having a relationship with financial institutions that can hold the account and working with our consumers with you know, managing their account and understanding all the functionalities of, you know, owning an account. So I think those are some really great ideas.
But I think, like, Vicky, oh, sorry, I was going to say, sorry to interrupt you, but I just thought, like, I mean, I know I mentioned matching with state or federal funds, but I mean, why can't a tribe also do that? You know, I think tribes do many things. I'm so thankful for my own Pueblo. But I mean, I think that's, you know, a way as well that perhaps the tribe can be able to do that with their membership in terms of those type of individual development accounts.
I love that idea. I think that's a great idea. So hopefully some tribes are going to hear this and think about that. You know, there's a model out there, you know, so it's not like starting from scratch, you know, in creating what that could look like. Absolutely. Any final thoughts as we've been, I know we've sort of started talking about story and you sharing, thank you so much, a little bit about your story and your experiences and also just your connection with people that you know and hearing their stories about finances and getting stronger and, you know, stable and feeling great about where they're at financially and kind of went through looking at resources and what needs to happen on different levels. Any final thoughts that you would like listeners to be thinking about or encouraging or what we need more of to improve, strengthen, and build on what we're already doing in our Native communities in terms of financial capability?
Well, I think with anything, you're never too young to start and you're never too old, right? I think that we have an opportunity in terms of wherever we're at to learn more, to you know, think about your life and financial security. And I think that in, you know, in whatever way we can, we just need to start thinking about community banking as well. You know, it could be lending cooperatives or tribal banking, right? But I think that, you know, there's a wealth of resources within our own communities and good lessons to draw upon, as well as, you know, I think there's also the advocacy work too that needs to take place, right? So also thinking about who the partners are in terms of your state, whether they have an Indian Affairs Department or similar department, but I think looking at our state and federal government and our partners and who should be partnering with us and that advocacy work that I know a number of individuals and organizations are involved in, but having more of that to make sure that we do get access to capital and whatever that means for an individual, right? I think that's the other thing. You and I could be talking about capital in very different ways. For me, it's I was able to secure a loan through my tribe, and I'm going to be able to build a house, which is really exciting for me personally. So I just think continuing the conversation. This podcast is wonderful. I think having more of those avenues is going to be important, and probably get more of our tribal communities talking and asking questions.
I love all of that. Those are wonderful recommendations. Never too old, never too young. Ask questions, continue your learning. And I think also I loved, continuing conversations, having, it goes back to our roots. It's storytelling. Let's talk about this. What does this mean? And having that. And also to what I'm hearing you say, three other things in that is thinking outside the box and looking at other venues and, almost creating different models based on existing models and taking the best practices from those places to finding ways to access capital. And what does that look like? And the importance of advocacy and what does that look like on the community grant, community level, state level, federal level, in terms of advocacy policy, those sort of changes and partnership, leveraging resources in that way to strengthen the sort of strategies that are currently existing, but also where there's still gaps. So wonderful recommendations. Thank you so much, Lynn. I want to just thank you again for joining us, for sharing. It was definitely a yummy, fruity conversation.
Well, I appreciate the opportunity, and maybe the next opportunity will be having you come do a podcast at my newly built home, hopefully soon, that I secured through a loan. So maybe that'll be next time when we can come together.
Oh, that would be amazing. You can tell us about the lending experience, the process, what questions to ask your lenders, and how to prepare for a loan. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Okay. For more information or questions about today's topic, contact the New Mexico Indian Affairs Office at 505-476-1600. Our next guest will be with Justine Correa with Native Community Capital. This is your host, Vicki Oldman. Ahyahat. Thank you for joining us.